Family Room Podcast, where I, Peter Squires, get to know your friends and neighbors. My family, they never know. My family, they never know.
My family. Welcome to the Family Room Podcast, getting to know your friends and neighbors. I'm Peter Squires. My guest on this episode is Eric Ott. Eric is a singer-songwriter and the man behind Hi-Fi Spin Design and Consulting. Eric and I discussed the making of his new album, Freeway UFOs, conflict and compromise in collaboration, anxiety attacks, being a military parent, reimagining higher education, working as a private eye and other odd jobs, pessimism versus realism, the lack of empathy built into the American identity, and, of course, the apocalypse, among other things. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. So what about your album? How'd it go?
Went well. I'm pretty happy with it. You know, it's funny because Chris is a control freak and so am I.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to just like, okay, here it is, it worked out really well. Basically, the only thing I was pretty militant about was the vocals and the vocal arrangements.
Yeah.
So it has this kind of ELO,
yeah,
Jeff Lynne kind of production
for
the vocals.
I definitely noticed that.
Yeah.
And I like it.
That's what I wanted. And he really got into it towards the end where, you know, he's like, Eric, there's like 30 tracks here of vocals. I'm like, yeah, they're all important, so keep them in.
They're all important. 20 would not be enough.
No.
That's awesome.
Well, the great thing about Jeff Lynne is he'll do one lead vocal and then track it a few times, then do a harmony and track it a few times, mm-hmm, and it just sounds thicker.
Totally.
And I was talking to Matthew Cause at the show, and he was saying how Rick Ocasek, when they recorded their album with Rick Ocasek, Rick Ocasek showed them how to double guitars.
Hmm.
So essentially, yeah, I guess you just double everything.
Huh. Was there like a way to double guitars or just that you should do it?
I think you should just do it.
Yeah.
Like with Jeff Lynne, he'll double the rhythm acoustic guitar track, but he'll use different acoustic guitars.
Hmm.
So you have those different tonalities throughout. Yeah. So it just sounds bigger.
Yeah.
So
that was a thing that Steve Albini said too, was always use different guitars for different tracks. Cause like, even if you use different amps and different pedals, you can tell that it's the same guitar.
Yeah.
But which is cool. Good to learn. But when I recorded with him, I didn't bring my instruments. So
yeah,
I had to use what he had there, which was, you know, a lot of really great equipment, except there was really only one real guitar and then like a bunch of kind of like weird oddity guitars.
Right.
So I ended up recording leads with this guitar that I like never would have chosen to use, but it was just like, well, this is what we got and we got to use something different. And the whole reason I came here is to listen to what he has to say. So I guess I'm going to use this weird shit.
How was it working with him? Was he pretty down to earth?
Yeah, he was awesome. He was totally nice. I mean, he's like has this reputation for being sort of a dick, but I didn't feel that way. But he was certainly like curt and down to business.
Yeah.
You know, which I think if you're sort of used to being like coddled would come across as a dick, but I'm certainly not used to being coddled, you
right,
know?
Right, right, right.
So like when I was coughing, he was like, would you like us to get you some tea? And I was like, I mean, I don't want to like be high maintenance. He's like, no, that's the normal thing. Like you can drink tea in a recording studio. I was like, okay, cool. Yeah. And then like I went to the Shellac show in Portland, which was like a year later. And I was like, hey, Steve, it's me, Peter Squires. I recorded with you last year. And he was just sort of like, did you? You know, it was just like, there was not even any pretending to remember. It was just sort of like, yeah, I record with someone every day, you know?
That's wild.
It's like he was wearing a like union suit, like a full body onesie, like a mechanic with the Electrical Audio logo on the back. And I think he just really thinks of himself as an engineer like he's fixing engines, you know?
Well, yeah, and he doesn't, even if he produces something, he just gets a flat rate. He doesn't get royalties. He just settles on a flat rate, which is wild.
Totally.
Can you imagine how much he would have made with all the albums that he's done?
He's given away millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Because he's just principled about, like, no, the artists, I'm not, like, the artists are the artists and I'm just here to record them. You know? And it's like, in some ways it's like, yeah, but you clearly do have put your own stamp on this project. That's why people want to record with you. But he just doesn't see it that way.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of the ideas that he had with the Pixies.
Yeah.
Like some landmark ideas where they would have never done that.
Yeah. And it's funny, the day I was there was the day that his interview with Marc Maron was released. Did you listen to that?
No.
It's really good. But he talks about looking back on that album with regret because he inserted himself too much. Where he's like, in hindsight, like, I don't do that anymore. Like, that's not my job. Like, on that album, he was a producer, but he regrets it. You know? It's weird. It's so funny how, like, all the different spins that collaborations can take based on people's personalities.
Yeah.
Like, you're having to, like, relinquish control to some degree, but this is the thing that I'm going to be very, like, hard and fast about because I learned this lesson and I want it to be this specific way.
Right. Well, yeah, I think an artist has a direction. I mean, I would imagine that every album that you make, you're kind of like, okay, I have this in mind, this sound, and I want it to give this type of energy or tell this story.
Yeah.
And then everything else is pretty much up for grabs.
Yeah. I feel like I need to remember to do that more. I love the RPM challenge, and I feel like it's been really good for me in terms of creative output, but it's been bad for me in terms of, like, paying loving attention to the finer details.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could have probably spent another 3 months on this record, but that isn't... That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I have a new project. I started working with Guy on an album that was just going to be weird, and Jim plays drums on one of the tracks. And so I got to go back and revisit that and start working on that and hopefully get Guy and Jim on it more. And maybe you, if you want to play some stuff on it. But it's just going to be a little more strange, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea of each different project and even each different album by a different project having its own very distinct quality to it.
I think that's important as an artist. I think every artist should do it. Or you're just going to basically sound like Journey or something.
Right. You know? Yeah. Or you'll turn into a, like, caricature of yourself.
Yeah, like the Stones.
Yeah.
Although the Stones early on did some amazing stuff. And after reading Keith Richards' book, I had more respect for Keith Richards and how he would immerse himself in a genre. I mean, when he got into reggae, like, he moved to Jamaica and just stayed there for a while.
Yeah.
And just studying the different guitar players and their technique and how they got that sound. And it's a really interesting book. I recommend it. And I didn't realize he did as much as he did. I thought it was pretty much the Mick Jagger show.
Hmm. Yeah, I haven't read that, but I've only heard really good things about it.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. When did you start playing music?
I started playing music when I was in middle school. I was playing drums as much as I could because my dad traveled a lot. But when he took over a business, he was home more often, so I didn't get to play the drums that much. In the summertime, I could have him in the barn and play him in the barn.
Nice. Where was this?
In Barrington.
Okay.
And then I got into writing lyrics and co-wrote a bunch of tunes with my best friend's brother, And we had kind of a thing for a little while where we just worked on music. And then he got serious with some girl. And so I ended up picking up the guitar to write music to my lyrics because I couldn't wait for him to do that. So that's how I started writing music. And so I had, and then I just started writing a bunch of songs.
Yeah. And you just played in bands all along, like since you were a kid?
My first real band was not until I was in college, actually. So that was a band called Cat Bingo. And then after Cat Bingo, it was the Bonnie Situation. And then after that, I was in the Ridleys for a little bit with a bunch of guys. And then that's when I just started, you know, doing solo stuff.
Yeah. It's so different being a solo guy or the head of a band than it is to just be like one piece of a band. I've definitely found like, so I've been playing, you know, maybe like a couple of shows a year as like Peter Squires and Friends, you know, like right. I did at the Not a Surf Show, where like it's my songs, I'm the lead singer, it's my band, and they're like my backup band.
Right.
And that's such a different experience from playing in like the Landladies, where we're all writing songs and we're all switching.
What do you like better?
I think in terms of the like the fun of it, probably the Landladies, because you get more like amazed by stuff of like, where did that idea come from?
Right.
Or like, that was so weird. Let's do that again.
Right.
Or like, where you're really kind of starting from something from scratch.
Yep.
Whereas with the backup band, you're kind of like having to be the boss and kind of say like, this is how I want this to sound. Do it this
right.
way. And there's like, I like my bandmates to put their own flair on it. Sometimes, but then sometimes I'm like, no, not like that. Do it like this. But I also am like a little bit controlling and like being able to do that. Whereas if I did that in the Landladies, it would like start a fight.
See, that's interesting because I feel that if I'm in a band, even if it's my own band, I have to kind of, I feel in order to make it a really good band, everybody in the band has to have some sort of vested interest in what line they're playing or whatever. So I, for the most part, say just do whatever you feel.
Do your thing.
And, but a lot of times I regret it because I'm like, okay, that sucks, but you know, I can't say that to this person.
But it's your suck.
And, you know, the thing is like, what do you do? I mean, I see all these people that are control freaks when it comes to a band and it sounds much better.
Yeah.
My stuff is pretty rough and it shouldn't be. And I want it to be perfect, but it never comes out perfect.
Yeah.
And when we did that show for Guy and Pam, somebody walked up to me and said, I really dig that sound because it sounds like pop, but it's or folk or punk or he just couldn't, you know, label it.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, well, it's just stupid. You know, it's the rock thing. You know, it's not anything different or weird or strange. But I've always tried to, every time I try to be different or have it sound cool or what is labeled cool, I just fuck up miserably. it's not good.
Yeah, it's hard to like get out of the lane you're used to being in.
Yeah.
You know, I had this like idea that I was gonna like go in a more gothy direction and like, you know, like have like a different look and like almost like take on a persona and almost in a sort of like David Bowie-ish way, like do an album in a certain persona. And then play some shows as that persona. Still Peter Squires, but like,
right.
You know, this is the thing that I'm going for a while. and not be afraid to do that. And I still like the idea of it, but when it comes time to like actually do it, it's just like, no, I'm falling back in my laurels, you know, because it's just like, it's hard to swing that hard when like for not really any stakes, you know, you're just kind of like embarrassing yourself in front of locals.
It's true. I mean, my last album, like, I thought I was working on this amazing piece, like this really artful statement of, you know, what I did, and it failed miserably.
How so?
I think it just didn't resonate with people at all. Hmm. Maybe one or two songs, if that. But now when I listen back, I kind of cringe at most of it.
Yeah, I have had that experience as well. I went back and was re-listening to some stuff I previously released, and I was just like, man, I can't believe I thought this sounded good.
Yeah.
Like, and it just, I felt like I'd had a statement in mind that I was making, and I look back on it and I'm just like, what an asshole. Yeah. Who is that guy?
Yeah. And the thing is there's only one person I can blame, and that's myself. I mean, Sean did an amazing job, and it was really thought out, but I think it didn't sound live whatsoever. Hmm. And there's some of it where I'm just really trying too hard, and I was still working on vocal arrangements and really kind of making things big. And I think I realized with this new album that I understand it better. I can craft it better. And I think I'm a better writer with this new album, where I've always wanted to write. There's this one tune where I've always wanted to do this kind of Paul McCartney changeover, like Band on the Run. Mm-hmm. And I did it this time, and I explained it to Chris, and he nailed it. And it just, I'm really stoked with it.
Which song is it?
It's called Gum Swollen Tooth, or Gum Swollen Teeth, something like that. I don't even know why it's a line in the song, but it's about anxiety.
Yeah.
And, but it's really cool. It sounds dark, but it sounds like Tom Petty doing a McCartney and Wings song.
All right.
It's nice. Kind of strange.
I love that. And your band was called Eric and the Anxiety, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that a thing?
The band, or do I have anxiety?
Like, is anxiety like an underlying theme?
I think so, yeah. I think we all have anxiety to a certain degree. I mean, you could call it something else, but I think we all self-medicate with booze or whatever, or food or anything, because we're just stressed out and we have anxieties.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I had a couple of years ago, I had my first panic attack ever, and it was so scary because like I didn't know what it was. I thought I was having a heart attack.
Yep. Did you go to the ER? Yeah. And they hook you up to all the monitors and say, oh, you're
like,
fine.
You're fine. And it's funny because when I got there, I was like panicking, and I got there and instantly I was just like embarrassed. I was like, what am I doing here? You know, but it's too late. You're there with chest pains, you know, and it's just like, oh, fuck. They like held me overnight and sent me this big bill, and it was all for nothing. Not nothing, but it was all for like just something that I had never experienced before.
Yeah, yeah. I've done that a few times, and it, you know, I don't know. It's almost like, shit, I wish I was having a heart attack. Then it would be worth it. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And then you could go to work the next day. Oh, yeah, I had a heart attack.
That's a totally legit excuse, you know?
It's such a, like, just a wimp. Oh, it's an anxiety attack.
You know? But it's like, you know, I was on the phone with my girlfriend, now wife, saying, like, I have pain in my chest, and it's the level of pain that if it were anywhere else in my body, I would ignore it. But because it's in my chest, it's causing me to freak out.
Yeah.
I was talking to my friend Max, who said he's had like a bunch of those. And he gave me a tip, which was like, if you ever feel that again, hold your finger in front of your mouth and pretend you're blowing out a candle, like over and over, just like.
Interesting.
And it like regulates your breathing
in
a way that like just somehow inherently calms you down.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think it's the breathing that gets out of hand.
Yeah. Well, both my kids get anxiety, and I was on a trip in Europe with my son, and we had to pull over because he was just like literally sweating, you know, breathing heavy, and just didn't feel good.
Hmm.
And I knew it was an anxiety attack because I've seen him before have it. And I said, yeah, no big deal. I'm just going to walk around. I'll leave you to just kind of calm yourself, close your eyes, take some deep breaths. And he got over it, like, you know, it was 15 or 20 minutes, something like that. But
yeah.
It's scary.
Totally.
The Air Force took that out of him. He doesn't have anxiety attacks anymore.
Did they actually, like, address it in some way? Or is it just like, there's no time for this here?
You know, I think they did change where he was going because of his anxiety, but also he's got flat feet, so that doesn't help him either.
Huh.
Like when he's running and stuff.
Yeah.
He failed his PT last time, and doctor said, well, you know, that's, we understand why, and da-da-da-da-da, but I don't know. A military man.
Is he in the Air Force now?
Yeah.
How does that feel to you, like, as a dad?
Well, very concerned because he was in South Korea for 2 years, and now he's in Germany, and then he's going back somewhere else. He wanted to go to South Korea again because it's more money, and he really loved the culture there. Like he slept over in a Buddhist temple, and he really dug that, but they won't allow him to go back there because of his feet and whatever. So he'll probably be coming home stateside somewhere, and he should know sometime this week or next week.
Wow,
because he's done in August in Germany. So
yeah, what did it feel like to initially send him off?
You know, it's really weird. His mom, my ex-wife, we don't talk at all. We have a really strained relationship. And so it's really hard to be involved with my kids as much as I want to be. And I kind of just take the high road and say, you know, whatever you feel comfortable with. So I didn't see him off. I saw him a week before, and it was hard, but he's always wanted to go.
Hmm.
Like, he's always wanted to travel, and he's done it. Like, he's been all over the world.
Yeah.
Because when he, you know, he takes a week off, he can go pretty much anywhere he wants.
Wow.
So he's been to Dubai. He's been all over Europe. So he's done exactly what he's wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, you always worry about your kids. You know, it doesn't matter how old they are. My daughter, Lindsay, is in Little Rock, and she's in the Air Force because she idolizes her brother.
Hmm.
And she really just didn't know what to do. She's an amazing writer and artist, which was, I think her going into the Air Force was more difficult for me to understand.
Hmm.
Because I really thought she's talented. She could write. She's really funny. She could go to New York and write for Saturday Night Live or whatever, or, you know, have aspirations to do that. She just wanted to do what her brother's doing.
Hmm.
She's not going to do it for more than 4 years. He went in for six. She went in for four. So we'll see what she does next. But I just want them to be happy, and that's all I care about.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the end of the day, I could not like it, but if they're happy, it's their life now. It's not mine.
Yeah. That must be a really hard thing to come to terms with as a parent. Like, just having, just the letting go. I mean, not to, like, trivialize it, but sort of like with the album, like, I'm going to hand this thing that no, is my responsibility true. Over to someone else, and you just have to accept that.
I think it was easier, and I think there is something to that where their mom was very protective, overprotective. I was overprotective. We coddled them both. And I think having her say, okay, I have to let you go, but you're going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be with the government and you're going to be in the military and they're going to take care of you, which is kind of stupid because, you know, we're going to have you walk on landmines, but we'll feed you after that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, what I mean?
It's like, yeah, in some ways it's really regimented and really disciplined and all that stuff that you're worried about young adults not being. And in the other way, they're like sending you into life threatening peril.
Right. Exactly. You know? So
they're both true.
Yeah. But I think that helped her, and I don't, you know, I'm not saying she's selfish or anything like that, but I think there's a certain aspect to that. And I think she was better off, or she was okay with that rather than, you know, them going to college, because college is, you do what you want.
Yeah.
And, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah. I've been thinking lately about like, whether or not college is still worth it. You know, in the like, I mean, I think if you're going to study for a specific degree, then it's more worth it. But like, just given how expensive it is and how much debt you go into, I'm like, and how many resources there are available, I'm like, what if there was just some sort of a thing where like you organized the sort of like social aspects of college? You had like a co-living situation with like new young adults, and then they just like read books and watched TED Talks and traveled and had internships.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
Like, 'cause I feel like you could do that and for so much less than the cost of college tuition.
But what you would have to do though is, society, especially corporate society, dictates that you need to have this piece of paper.
Yeah.
And you can be a worthless person, not know anything, and have a PhD.
Yeah.
Or a master's or whatever. And, you know, go in and say, yeah, look at all I've
done.
The
letters after my name. I know. I always just feel like my college degree has not gotten me anywhere, except that I've never really had to like apply to grown-up jobs without having had it, you know, so I don't know.
What did you study?
I majored in American culture, you know, so total like liberal arts.
Yeah.
Just like learning about things that I was interested in, you know, so it's not like I majored in economics and then went and worked on Wall Street or like business or engineering or something like that. You know, it was just sort of like learned about stuff. And then, you know, I feel like my resume was more about like the work experience that I got was what sort of ultimately told the story more than what I studied.
Right. And sometimes that works. Depends, you know, the tech sector, which I'm in half and half tech and then and marketing, but I never went to school for IT. I went to school for design, and I basically filled the void at work where no one wanted to deal with the computers or the servers or anything like that. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll just look it up on Google or I'll read a book and I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So I did that, and that's my background in tech.
Yeah.
And graphic design is kind of funny because when I went to school, we didn't have colored monitors.
Wow.
It was all monochrome.
Wow.
And the Excel spreadsheets were like, you still had a DOS prompt for, it wasn't even Excel. It was, I think it was, Lotus.
Wow.
You know, and yeah. Strange, you know. And this was in 1990 and 91. So things were weird in the graphic design business, and the economy was horrible. So I was making pizzas, and I did really good at it. I even thought about opening up a pizza place at one point. And because I took photography in school, a friend of my parents was a state trooper, and he had me, says, "Hey, can you take pictures?" I'm like, "Yeah." You know, he's like, "Okay, I want to hire you. I'm going to train you, and you're going to be a private investigator."
Really?
Yeah. So I did that for off and on for 6 years.
Holy shit. Yeah. What was that like?
That was pretty bizarre. You know, it was basically you're stalking people and videotaping and taking their pictures.
Did you have to like become accredited in some way?
You have to be licensed. So back then, you could become like an apprentice, and you're under a person's license for a year, and then you get your own license. And so I was licensed in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Vermont, and Maine. So I could go anywhere where the work was in New England. And then after a year, I had my own license. So I had to get my own insurance and bonded and all that garbage. And yeah, I just wake up at 3 a.m. I'm at people's houses like at 5 a.m. and just waiting for them to leave for work or, you know, whatever their thing was, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I did that for a while.
Jesus. That's crazy.
Yeah. It was a very, I think that job really jaded me.
Yeah.
Because people are not good. A lot of people are not good.
Well, the ones who have private eyes investigating them. But.
Yeah, but it's, you know, the thing is like after a while, and I guess you don't realize it, is there's a reason you're following this person.
Yeah.
Because they do suspect that that person's not doing the right thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, even the domestic cases were really hard because like there was this one where this guy was cheating on his wife. She knew it, but it was his kid's birthday. And the guy said he had to work, but the wife found out that his girlfriend had a birthday too. So the guy opted to go to his girlfriend's house rather than his kid's house.
Oh my God.
And that's just like, that's shitty.
If you're going to lead a double life, the least you can do is not date someone with the same birthday as
that should be a prerequisite. All right, we're going to have sex, but first, when's your birthday? You don't have to tell me the year.
Before we do this again,
yeah.
There's exactly. A few things I need to know. Oh, man. God. So, like, what's the, like, craziest thing that you experienced as a private eye or witnessed or whatever?
There was this one guy with bilateral carpal tunnel, so he couldn't do anything. He couldn't, like, brush his teeth, supposedly. And he was a roofer. Uh-huh. So I caught him roofing. And he had hung the hammer up on the top rung of the ladder and climbed down. And then he forgot about the hammer, and he moved the ladder, and the hammer literally fell on his head.
Oh, my God.
And I got it on video.
What, did he get hurt?
You know, the thing is I'm sure he was hurt, but he just kept on working.
Yeah.
So when, you know, we presented that to the attorneys and his attorney, they're like, there's no case here. You got to settle out.
Yeah.
You know, you're done.
And you've been punished enough. You had a ladder fall on your head.
Yeah, you had a hammer hit your head. And then there was this woman where, and I really felt bad about this one, where this woman was, she couldn't do anything. Supposedly she was bedridden, and she was helping out a community thing where she was cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And I got her lifting like a big giant thing of pasta, like huge.
Yeah.
Like that would feed, you know, a small town.
Yeah.
And you know, people were like, how the hell did you get in there? Wait. So I was just interviewing for my a college course, and I was just going to get video, and I interviewed people and just basically lied to them. And
yeah.
And I felt bad. And I think towards the end, I was just kind of feeling bad where I was just like, I don't know, I can't do this anymore. And
yeah.
My son was really young. He was two or three. And so I started working for my dad, and I was a office manager for him. And he had an interesting thing where he basically manufactured and sold liquor and beer dispensers throughout the United States.
Okay.
So like the Luxor Hotel, he had a liquor system in there. So I got to work in the Luxor Hotel when they were building it.
Cool.
Which was pretty wild. I got to go to Hawaii. I got to go to all the casino boats down south when they legalized gambling.
Wow.
There. And they never went anywhere. They just dock.
Huh.
That was the loophole for gambling casinos down in Louisiana. You know?
Like that if you're on a boat, it's legal?
Yeah.
But the boat doesn't have to go anywhere.
As long as it's on water.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a...
And Merv Griffin owned one of the boats. And
really?
I saw Merv Griffin like walk by me.
You were like, that guy invented Jeopardy.
No, I was just like, that dude looks like shit. Like, he was old and he had an entourage and yeah. So that was weird.
Wow. This is like a very amazing and unusual trajectory from like design photography into private eye into, you know, traveling the country with liquor and beer dispensation.
Dispensions?
And then what?
Dispensaries.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's really interesting is I wanted to get out of the PI thing. So I'm going to start designing, but I needed a job in between those. So I drove a Humpty Dumpty potato chip truck for a little while.
Like delivering to stores?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'd have to move the bags and if they were past due, and I was promised, oh, this job's going to pay a lot. You can make up to 60 grand a year doing this. I'm like, fuck yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So it was early in the morning and the chip delivery, it's like these boxes stacked up to the ceiling and they had a warehouse in Kittery that I would have to go to and do that. And I think I quit after 4 months.
Yeah.
Because it was just a miserable job.
Hmm.
Like people are so petty over a fucking bag of chips.
What do you mean?
And they're like, oh, you don't have the ketchup chips? Like, no, sorry, we don't have the ketchup chips this week or this month. And I guess being in the service industry, because I, you know, worked in restaurants and delivered chips, I really had a newfound respect for anyone that is in the service industry. You know, it's a really hard job.
Mm.
And people tend to look down at you. You know, they're kind of, not all people, but a good portion of people are just like shitty, you know?
Yeah, it's been, I just started relatively recently working at North Country Cider.
And let me say something for a second. I'm not a cider guy.
Yeah.
And their cider just blows me away.
It's awesome.
It's amazing.
Really, really good. But I definitely had some self-judgment about entering the service industry.
Yeah.
At, you know, in my 30s, you know, because I had waited tables before and stuff like that. But yeah. I'd been working in offices for a while and grown-up jobs kind of things. And I definitely I think I would enjoy doing something like this, but is it the right thing to do? Because I'm going in the wrong direction, you know, but there was some self-judgment about it. And I feel like I've gotten over it, especially now that I've been doing it a little while and it's oh, this is fun and this is good work. And I'm part of a small company that's growing and that's really
right.
fulfilling.
And it could take you other places.
Yeah. I guess my only real concern now is more sort of practical logistical things, healthcare and stuff like that, you know?
Oh, they don't give you any healthcare or anything?
No. I mean, they're just so small right now that it's like they don't really have the wiggle room for it.
Well, Trump's going to take care of that for you.
I'm sure. I'll end up joining the Air Force at age
If you're cold,
37.
He'll shit on you.
Yeah. That's hot. You'll like it.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, I'm really worried about that stuff. Like, we're on Cobra coverage from my wife's old job.
Yeah.
Until
that's
like
expensive.
June. Yeah, it is. But it's like at least we're covered. And at least we like know how much it is. And like,
so you're going to have to start eating healthy, man. Just it's salad and tomatoes for the rest of your life and water.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you get sick, just like wander out into the woods and let it happen.
That's right. Do what the cats do.
Yeah.
Just go off into the woods and just die.
My time has come.
That's right.
Goodbye. It's been a pleasure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who knows what's going to happen. I hope that it doesn't get completely, you know, I guess the pessimistic or the like dark, but the way I've been trying to like tell myself it's all right is it's like, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we didn't have Obamacare, and the worst it'll be is the same as it was then.
Yeah.
Where, like, you can get health insurance. It just sucks, you know?
That's expensive. And, but I mean, back to the pessimism or the pessimist, I don't use that word anymore. I say realist.
Hmm.
You know, you could either be an optimist or you can be a realist.
Really?
Yeah.
I think realist is somewhere in between. I guess it. You're probably right most of the time, you know. But I do think that like you can be a pessimist and put an overly negative spin on, like, not having faith in the possible positivity of outcomes.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm jaded and old, yeah. So. I'll never be the old, like, angry person that my dad was, but, and every time I get that way, I say, okay, I'm not going to be that person.
Hmm. How was he that way?
He was, he watched Fox News every night.
Hmm.
When he was dying, we would sit with him in case he like woke up and needed something. And I had to watch Fox News for 8 hours straight because he'd like get up and he's like, you know, put on Fox News, you know? So I just said, screw it. Okay. This is my thing. I'm going to help this old man by watching Fox News and letting him listen to Fox News. And number one, I mean, the demographics is old people that are bitter, you know, and old men for the most part, because that's why they have like the female models doing the newscasting.
Yeah.
And he consumed himself with politics and local, state, federal, and he didn't enjoy anything in life. He was a workaholic, and all he got into was like when he had to retire, he just tried to be actively involved in politics. You know, the town, he would go to town meetings and he would write editorials and he would, you know, be really mean to my wife because she was a teacher and he felt that teachers were, you know, draining the economy and like they were skidding out of the parking lot and their BMWs and leaving at 2:30. And I'm like, Dad, you have no idea how much teachers work.
Yeah.
And, so he was just a very cranky, mean old man.
Hmm.
And, we didn't get along that well. And, but I think to be that type of person is just so negative. And the only parting words I had for him was just let go of everything and be happy as long as you can while you're in this state.
Yeah.
You know, just let go of that anger and whatever happens after that is going to be good. It's going to be better.
Yeah.
But you don't want to die angry and bitter.
Hmm.
You know?
Do you feel like he heeded that at all?
I don't know. I really don't know. I hope he did. I mean, I didn't like the guy for several reasons. And I disagree with the fact that because someone's your parent, that you're supposed to like them.
Yeah.
Even with family. I mean, sometimes family can be a hard thing. There are people that you wouldn't normally hang out with. But for him, he was just very mean to my mom. And but he would give the shirt off his back for other people, which was strange.
Yeah.
But he, yeah, I think, yeah, he just was a crazy old man.
Yeah.
Crazy person.
It is hard when you see the traits in yourself that you don't like about your parents.
Oh, know? Yeah.
And even if it's just for a moment and you're like, oh, God, no, I'm doomed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, raising my kids was when I was really young. I was married when I was 22. And we had kids when I was, I think I was 26 when we had Liam. And at first I thought just like when your kids weren't doing something they weren't supposed to do, I thought you'd just fucking yell at them. You know, that's what you do. That's what my father did.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, stop doing that. You know, I never swear at them, but, I would just, you know, I would get so angry. And, then after my divorce, it made me a much better father. Like I understood and I cherished every second with my kids. And, I think, I learned a lot. That changed me a lot. That and my brother passing away, I think, turned me into a totally different person.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that it takes things as drastic as that to provide the perspective that it takes for a person to change. Yeah. But that's also really good that there can be such a positive outcome of things that are tragic or that feel devastating at the time, that like that you can look back on it and be like, I'm glad to be the person I am, and it's okay that came as a result of terrible things happening.
Yeah, I think I think changing and evolving and making strides to become a better person for yourself, for the people around you, for your community, all of that is so important. And I don't think enough people do it.
Yeah.
But I've surrounded myself with really amazing people that I love. I mean, I think that's the huge thing. I always thought you needed a big circle of friends. And then I've come to realize that it's just the quality of people around you that matters. It's not the amount, you know?
And that they're the right people for you. You know, that,
yeah,
like, these
totally.
Are the people who I feel like the version of myself that I like, you know, that
or
I
you aspire
wanna,
to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they appreciate the things about me that I like about myself.
Yeah.
You know, I go out every summer to, Star Island, and I go to this, it's called Yak. It used to be the Young Adults Conference, but we all started getting too old, so they changed the name to the Yearly Adults Conference. This summer I went out there, and like one of the workshops I lead is a live band karaoke where like me and a couple of people just like learn some songs without a singer, and then we play it, you know, basically just like being in a cover band,
right,
without having to sing, and then people just sign up and play karaoke, and it's awesome. And I just felt like, you know, people had such a good time doing it, and I had such a good time doing it, and I came home and I was like, the thing that I value so much about that community is that they like the things about me that I also like about myself, you know, that like they see the contributions I make to that community as valuable. Yep. You know, and like sometimes I feel that way, like on the seacoast or just like in the like larger community. And then sometimes I'm like, nobody fucking cares what I have to say or do, you know? And,
you know, I think a small portion do. I mean, you would hope. I think, I don't know. I, as a musician, and I'm sure you feel the same way, it's very easy to be self-deprecating.
Yeah.
And it's hard to be your own cheerleader.
Yeah.
Because you get tired of it. You're like, fuck, what am I doing? And, but you get that one person that walks up to you or that friend that says, hey, I really love that new song, or I, you know, you got to keep on doing it.
Yeah.
And that helps.
It goes so far.
It really does.
Totally.
So I think it's like you pay it forward, and you have to be genuine. You can't, like, someone puts out something that's really shitty, and you just say, yeah, nice. You know?
Yeah.
Just don't go overboard with it.
Yeah, totally. You know? You're like, I'm glad that you did that.
Yeah.
You
know?
That's what it's, I won't call the person out, but there's someone who had made a habit of every time the landladies played a show, they would come up and say, it really looks like you guys are having fun up there. And I was like, what a great way to not compliment somebody, but say something nice to them after a show.
My wife's mom, anytime she has some food that she's not really digging, she'll go, interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Which is a very Larry David thing, you know?
Yeah.
She's like, interesting.
This is food, huh?
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Nice. Yeah. So where are you in your life, like, compared to where you thought you would be now?
Well, it depends on each stage of life. I mean, when I was a kid, I thought I would be very wealthy and important. Always thought that. Even when I was in high school or college, I'm going to be wealthy. I'm going to be important.
Where do you think that came from?
I don't know. Probably watching way too much television.
Yeah.
I love television.
I do feel like there that is kind of like a societal thing. That is like this like American dream of not only making lots of money, but being like regarded.
Yeah, I think I think for the most part, I think society does say it, you know, it comes hand in hand to be important, and you're important because you have money or vice versa.
Yeah.
And I think, cause I was raised like both my mom and dad were, extremely right wing, you know, they loved Reagan, loved Bush, and I didn't understand politics. I hadn't traveled. And it's funny how you were saying that, you know, if there was this college, but it really wasn't, they just travel. And I was talking to somebody the other day where there should be a prerequisite of kids in high school. And one should be learn how to code. And two, you have to stay a month in a different country.
Yeah.
And learn a little bit of the language, a lot of the culture.
Totally.
And understand that everybody is the same. Everybody has the same hopes and dreams.
Totally.
They want to be happy.
Yeah.
They want to make a living. They want to have a roof over their head. That's about it.
It's huge. It's so eye-opening. Like, we just did a bunch of traveling, and I had hardly left the country before. And I learned so much just by, like, seeing other people in action.
Well, you become more empathetic
totally.
To anyone's cause.
Yeah. To know what it feels like to be the person who doesn't speak the language.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but still wants to like be able to eat and find a place to sleep and not get lost and not, you know, go the wrong way down a one-way street or, you know.
Right, right.
You know, and also to see like the things that people do other places that actually like work great. And it's like, I wish we had that here. You know?
Well, that's the thing too, is, you know, you look at, the healthcare system now, and as Americans, our government is very arrogant. We're like, and a lot of people are, they're just America's number one.
Right.
It's the greatest nation. Nah, not really.
Yeah.
It may have been in the Industrial Revolution, maybe.
Yeah.
But still not then. I mean, we had slave labor for kids, you right. know. I mean, we're, you know. And now, we still, you can go bankrupt by getting an illness, losing everything, and then becoming homeless and just dying on the streets because you couldn't, you know, pay for something.
Right.
When you got sick. It wasn't even your fault, you know.
And that is somehow like worthwhile collateral damage for our quote unquote freedoms.
Yeah.
You know, that like I was thinking a lot about that lately, that like it's so built in to our national identity ever since literally like the American Revolution, this hatred of taxes.
Yeah.
And that,
and this country was founded on that.
Right. Exactly.
But yet we pay taxes.
Yeah. But we pay way less taxes than a lot of other countries where they do have, you know, more social programs.
Germany is like, what, 45, 50%?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And we also spend a way, way higher percentage of our government budget on national defense.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like these are unique characteristics to America that I think you don't even necessarily think about until – because you can like – learn that they do things differently somewhere else and like sort of like hear it, but it's different to actually go other places and see it. Be like, this
right.
is how
see it work.
They spend their money, and this is like how things are different.
And they spend money basically on, you know, extra things. Like they know they have retirement, they know they have medical care, so they're paying for their rent, and if they have a car, they're paying for a car. All the rest is basically just spending money.
Yeah.
Just getting some new shoes or whatever. And I think, you know, we do that to a certain degree, but we have no retirement.
Right.
You know, we have no health care.
Yeah.
And it's like I got this really bitchin' 4x4 pickup truck with my American flag on the back. And my four-wheeler on the back, but I have no health care, and I have nothing in the bank.
No education, I pay rent, and I'm in debt. Yeah.
But God damn it, I can own a gun.
That's my debt, God damn it.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's and just to, like, to be convinced that that's better, you know, than being helped by the government and, God forbid, helping other people as well.
And the people say, oh, well, you know, the government, like, look what they did to the post office. Like, you go to the post office and da da da. It's like, well, okay. Yeah, you're right. Some things that the government does isn't run properly.
Yeah.
But as the people, if you come together, you can demand that they fix it. Obamacare is not perfect by any means. But why didn't we do – I mean, we have some really great minds here. You know, we do have smart people. And why not do an analysis of the top three countries that do healthcare right and take all the, okay, this is kind of fucked up. This really doesn't work. It wouldn't work for us because whatever. We're going to change that a little bit. We're going to tweak it. But why can't we do that?
Yeah, because we have for-profit health insurance companies and our elected officials are beholden to them and not to us.
Right.
Which is outrageous.
You need to get rid of lobbyists, and you need to get rid of for-profit healthcare.
Yeah.
And you would fix it. I think Canada has a cap for even frivolous lawsuits or medical lawsuits.
Huh.
They have a cap on it. So they're controlling any type of, you know, lawsuits that's going to drive – the premiums or whatever.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And there are several, and I was listening to NPR and it was interesting. There's different types of socialized medical care. And we would just have to figure out what works for us. And I understand that, You know, you look at a place like Sweden or a smaller place that has less population and like, well, it works because it's a less population. But if you look at our population, it's a shitload of people paying taxes. We can pay more. If someone said, Eric, you have to pay an extra 6% for socialized medical care for everybody, I'd be, take it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And I don't make that much money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and even just like, yeah, because why wouldn't you be? You know, because the whole idea of taxes as this terrible punishment and not as like, we're all, isn't it great that we're all buying in to have a better society?
That's exactly what it is. It's, we need to start thinking about community again. And when I say community, as all of us, we're all in it together. We need to start taking care of each other, and not being so worried about who's climbing a fence or who's, you know, doing this or who's doing that. And honestly, I don't give a shit if North Korea has nukes. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what? I if he wants to blow us up, so be it. I don't care anymore. Yeah. I just want to take care of our people. And I think if something's happening outside of the United States, then we have to become a bigger community, a world community, and really work with the UN and kind of figure out, all right, what can we do to help these people? Because someone is essentially killing their own people, like right. Syria or something. My mom couldn't understand the whole thing with refugees. She's like, "Oh, they don't need to be here. They're all terrorists." And I'm like, "Mom, I said, you're listening to what Dad used to say. I said, you're listening to Fox News. I said, just imagine you're a Catholic, okay, and your house gets bombed. It's some sort of fucked up war or whatever, and you live." And you have the clothes on your back and you have your kids and you want to move to the next town over or the next country over, like Canada or whatever. But it, whatever, you need to relocate because you no longer have a home here. And they won't take you because of your religion.
Or they won't take you because they're associating you with the people who bombed your house.
Right.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Well, I never thought of it that way." I'm like, "Well, that's the problem. You're being fed this propaganda that, you know, we need to be fearful of all these people around us, where 90% of the times it's the government. It's not the people. It's the governments.
Yeah.
The governments that we elect in.
Right.
Or somehow they get elected in.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. Like, I'm really surprised that there's not a revolution here.
Hmm.
And I think, I don't know who I was talking to, but it was funny because they're very nonviolent. They said the only way to fix what's happening in America is the liberals need to grab guns and start fighting.
Hmm.
And I'm like, that's a really odd statement.
Yeah.
But it makes sense.
Yeah. You know, I had this weird moment after Trump got elected where I was like, what if there was like a military coup and like the like generals basically were like, this, we reject this man as our commander in chief and we're like, we won't allow it. And I had this moment of being like, oh wow, that would be something. Like, what if that happened? That would be good. You know? And it's like, oh my God, I wanted a military coup to happen in America,
yeah.
You know? And it's just like, I don't know. I don't actually, but I also like, I think that there's it's this moment on both sides somehow of this real, real loss of faith in the current system that like,
it is the
that
system.
It's working for everybody, you know?
I think, you know, and I was discussing this with somebody and we were just talking about, you know, I don't necessarily say that the left side has all the right ideas.
Right.
And same with the right. I think the problem is the system's broken and we failed in communicating. We no longer communicate. It's either my ideas or nothing.
Right.
And we don't know how to compromise anymore. Compromise is a bad word. And I think if we continue down that path, we will be Rome. We will crumble.
Well, and that's, yeah, I wonder, that actually got, you know, we were in Egypt for part of our trip and I was thinking about like the rise and fall of empires and like, you know, we left like a few days after Trump's inauguration. So like it was very much on our mind, like
yeah.
placing our current situation in sort of like historical and international context. Like, yeah. what does it feel like to be a citizen of Rome when the empire falls? You know, like, does it affect everybody? Like, how is it just like, what is it like that everybody doesn't just like instantly die and then like a new generation of people is born that operates under a different government?
No, there's a transition.
Yeah. So it's like, what does it feel like to be part of the end of an empire, you know? Yeah. And is that this or will it be during our lifetime? It feels so much more possible than it ever has before.
Oh, totally. And I think it will to some degree. And that's one of the things that my dad was always saying. He's like, you know, it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. But that was because he was a bigot and he hated Democrats. So Obama was like basically Satan to him.
Yeah.
And I think I'm afraid that we've become the left side almost reactionary as the right was with Obama.
I am too.
So therefore, I try to be a bit more like, okay, what can we do to improve this and stay rational rather than just fire off memes on Facebook
right.
and march without a real solution.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I wonder what will bring us together again, because it can't go like this forever, you know, but I don't know what it looks like to have a sort of like,
I think it's going to be a catastrophe.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking like, you know, Independence Day aliens coming down, but it could be a plague of some sort. It could be an asteroid. It could be World War III.
Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of. And I was thinking about like the Russia thing, like what if it does all finally like come to pass that like, yeah, Russia interfered in our elections and like Trump gets impeached or whatever, or like regardless, like what happens if we go to war with Russia, you know,
over what they did? I don't think it's worth it.
No, I don't either. But like,
I mean, the Democrats want it and the Republicans want it. They both want it.
Yeah.
They want World War III to happen.
Ugh.
From everything that I've read, it's like a release that needs to happen for them.
Well, this is like Bannon's ideology too, right? That like war is good for you from this perspective of like almost like societal catharsis.
But I thought we grew out of that. I thought we've evolved more where we're not like war is a good thing and it moves us along.
Right.
I think, you know, it's really interesting. There was this scientist and they asked him like really smart dude. And someone asked him, do you believe in aliens or, you know, another species living yeah. somewhere? And he said, oh, I'm sure there's something out there. The problem is that they get too smart and they kill each other before they can get anywhere else. They get so smart. So before they could actually make that leap to travel beyond their galaxy, they end up killing each other in wars.
Hmm.
And that really resonated with me. I'm like, holy shit, that's really smart. That's essentially saying, you know what? we here on Earth, we could do some amazing things, and we are doing amazing things. You look at all these new inventions that are happening, like the heart, the 3D printing of limbs, and these new ways to gather water in the desert, all these positive things that we can become a better race and to help each other. And it's going to be all these generals with small dicks it's going to ruin all that.
Right. Yeah. And it sounds like a far-fetched hypothesis until you realize that he's talking about us.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Why wouldn't whatever other species is out there do the same thing that we're doing?
Right.
You know?
And the thing is that we do have to evolve. We need to, it's not even, you know, learning how to build a better engine or a flying car. It's opening yourself up to learn about each other and treat people better and learn how to not argue and just rise above that shit.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we have a smart enough population to do that.
Yeah.
And what aggravates that? You know, what makes you upset other than someone driving poorly in front of you? But what what drives you insane to want to drop, you know, chemical bombs on little children in homes and churches and everything else? What drives you to that?
Yeah.
How do you even justify that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you don't see those lives as valuable. You don't see those lives as humans, you know, like that we all everyone has their own different cutoff of like, this is what I see as another, an equal to me,
yeah.
You know, for some people it's animals, it's all the way down to like bugs, you know, like all of these lives are equally important. And some people don't even feel that way about other human beings, you know,
that's
and
scary.
And they draw different cutoffs. Like, yeah, nobody's life is valuable. My own life's not valuable. And, you know, it's like I don't know what it's going to take for humans to at least agree that other human lives are valuable. You know, this is one of the things that like, is confounding to me about, like the whole pro-life thing. 'Cause like I'm very strongly pro-choice, but I also kind of like, I understand the pro-life. It's like one of those things that becomes confusing to me, because like, if you really believe that people are killing people, then it's like, man, like I get it, you know? And like pro-choice allows you the option to be pro-life, you know, like you can be pro-life within
right.
the context. You can choose to be pro-life.
And you know, I had this conversation with my ex-wife when we were married, and we were talking about, you know, abortion. We weren't talking about an abortion for ourselves. We were just like, you know, where do you stand in that?
Yeah.
And, you know, we had a rational conversation. Myself, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But it's not up to me to say to another woman,
right,
you can't, you have to keep that baby.
Right.
And I think, you know, if you believe, you know, the whole free will thing, you know, is that part of that? I don't know.
Right.
I know I find it funny how the extreme right are pro-life, but they're also
pro-death penalty.
Pro-death penalty.
Yeah, it's the hypocrisy of it, or the like, well, once you're born, you don't deserve
healthcare.
To be cared for,
yeah.
Or to be like,
yeah.
You know, that like, yeah, the hypocrisy of that is the thing that like makes it easy for me to choose a side. But it's like, you know, in that spectrum of like, how do we value lives? It's like, well,
right.
Some of these people see that as a life, and like, to some degree, it's like, yeah, that that's really, really complicated.
But it's so hard, and I couldn't even imagine being a couple or a single mom or a soon-to-be single mom in that position where she's like, I don't know if I could give this baby up for adoption after carrying it for 9 months. Because that's basically, that's just a shitty thing to say.
Yeah.
Like, well, you're not going to have any feelings.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But like, you know, within the first, you know, few weeks or whatever, and you're like, I'm not emotionally equipped to handle this right now.
Yeah.
Financially, emotionally, and this kid will not have the best life because I can't do that for them. And I think that's, and I know everybody abuses everything, right? Sometimes you go to McDonald's, you'll have three cheeseburgers because you can.
Right.
Some women will have abortions because they can.
Right.
Because they fucked up maybe their third time. It's not the norm. It's not something that happens, you know, a lot.
Right.
But then there's these women that it's like, I can't do this right now. And this will ruin my life. It'll ruin my partner's
life. Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I'm totally pro-choice.
I saw the sign that you stand with.
Planned Parenthood sign out front, and I try to volunteer for them and donate to them and stuff. So I'm not trying to like
pro-life guy. But I understand that.
But it's one of those things where it's like this political issue that like giving the benefit of the doubt to people who claim to believe this, it's like I can – in that way, I can understand why this would be such a – that why you would feel so strongly about it.
But do you think it's a political thing, though?
It shouldn't be.
Right.
It shouldn't be. And it doesn't make any damn sense.
I don't want to say moral, but it's something in your soul that if you need to do it, then you need to do it. And I think it's something that's so personal that I find it absurd that the government is trying to control that.
Right.
It's like, whether you piss standing up or, you know, or standing up or sitting down kind of thing. Like, what if the government felt like there was something wrong with men peeing sitting down?
Right.
I know I'm trivializing it, but seriously, it's not a government thing.
Right. Right.
Has no right to be.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. It's absurd that half the people are expected to believe all of these different have the same opinions on all of these different issues in lockstep, like that half the population is supposed to uniformly believe that to be pro-life and pro-gun and pro-death penalty and anti-gay marriage. And like, I just don't think people believe things that way. Everyone has different beliefs about everything, but it's like, you're supposed to like follow one party line or the other.
Well, and that's why we have so many religions. It's because I think religions offer people a team to be on and that match their ideals. And I think, and then there's people that just don't subscribe to it anymore. And I think, it's going to be an interesting thing in 20 or 30 years. Where will religion go?
Yeah.
Will it become more subdued where people just really won't follow it? And already it's become ingrained into our society for the most part. And I know that's a good thing, you know, because we're more tolerant of each other. And that, I think, started with religion in medieval times or whatever. But I think now, as it becomes ingrained and people don't want to necessarily subscribe to one certain belief, what happens to religion in 20 or 30 years?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think a lot fewer people are practicing almost all religions, you know, and then sort of like, but it seems like sort of like fundamentalists, the people who are hanging on to their belief systems most strongly, have an outsized impact on everyone else, you know?
Like my aunts, my mom's side, their sisters are the sweetest people you'll ever know. They're all Catholics. And when I used to go visit in Connecticut, I would have to stand up and be an altar boy, you know, guest altar boy or whatever. And I just found it fun. And it was just like, it never bothered me.
Yeah.
Religion never bothered me.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't pushed. It was just this thing you did. And that was it. And I think if there was no other, thing that affected me with religion, I'd probably be okay with it. But as I grow older and I see the Baptist, the fundamentalist, you know, and it's like, how can you be so mean? Mm-hmm. Like with gay marriage, like two people that love each other, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we need more of that.
Yeah.
We need more of that. We don't need less of that.
Totally.
Just because you find it weird or strange, that's okay. It's not affecting you at all. And I remember before my aunt died, she was telling me how, cause I told her, and you know, I was probably 10 years ago. I was like, yeah, I don't understand why like these churches are getting so much money and what are they doing with them? And she goes, well, I just had to leave my church because I found out that they really weren't doing anything with it. And I went to another church that actually does something with that money. Mm-hmm. And in a good way. And I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know? So I think you're right. I think it's a few bad apples, but people love to report on the bad apples and not the good people.
Yeah.
You know, like they tend to say, well, all Muslim religion is, it's just, they're all evil. All Catholics, are all crazy, you know, all priests rape boys. You know, we generalize, and I think the problem with all of us is we tend to generalize too much.
Yeah.
We don't say, well, that doesn't mean everybody. You know, if someone believes in God, they're not an asshole. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Or if they believe in Allah or if they believe in Satan and, you know, they worship, or if they're Wiccan or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's their own beliefs and they have every right to do that. But it's very easy to shit on people. Sometimes I even get on this anti-religion tyrant on Facebook and then the next day I'm like, I'm such an asshole. And I delete it. But I think that's something that challenges me.
Yeah.
Especially after having my brother passed away and he was the nicest person and he suffered. And I think those are the questions that can never be asked in an intelligent and rational way. No one can ever explain to me why a little girl drowns or someone dies of cystic fibrosis or, you know, the people that are just so mean, they die a quick death or they live to be 100. You know, no one can explain that. No one can rationalize that to me.
Right.
And that's where I get pissed.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, there's no order to it. There's no fairness to it. And for people to use religion to claim a superiority over other people or to claim, you know, but it also makes you understand why people want it because they want answers to those questions that are
totally
devastating, you know? So it's like it at the same time, it explains the reason for religion and it also explains the reason why religion's bullshit simultaneously, you know?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I mean, I hope that like, If it does stick around, it can be more of a tool to bring people together than to tear people apart. But it has not really shown itself to be that way for on the like international scale.
I think with power comes corruption.
Yeah.
And that is human nature. And we have to evolve and get away from that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that'll ever happen.
Yeah. It's just history will just keep repeating itself with different technology and different sort of like details. But the like ins and outs of human nature will just, you know, keep on cycling through. Because we can all only last for, you know, I don't know, 80, 90 years tops.
Right.
And then, you know, the next batch of people gets to do it all over again. You know, it's slightly different
means of communication. Like, you get someone like, I was very moved at Pam's service.
Mm.
And they were talking about the ripples and, you know, why can't we all do that though?
Hmm.
I mean, she was a special person and yeah. I'm sure it was easy for her, but for how people are and like just do one simple, cool thing a day to help someone.
Yeah.
That's not that difficult.
No, no. And it shouldn't be that unusual for someone to be that kind,
yeah.
You know, but it is, you know,
it's strange.
Yeah.
But I think if we, you know, just one small little thing every day, everybody, I think it would be a better world.
Yeah. So what are you going to do?
I think about that a lot. I mean, I do stuff, you know, we give money, lots of money to the SPCA, or we go with the independent thing because the SPCA actually, what sucks about the big organizations is that they have to pay for stars to market them, you know, say, you know, like Sarah McLachlan,
right?
You know, she gets a royalty for that.
Yeah.
Why can't Sarah say, hey,
on
it's yours, yeah. On me. So we give money to this where we got Luke Skywalker, Fluffy Dogs. And this poor woman, she blogs like every Friday and says, okay, before I hit the bottle, I'm going to tell you all the good things, but then all the bad things has happened to the dogs that we've seen this week.
Yeah.
And I really want to help the kids that, like, every year, every fall, my wife has to buy all this stuff, supplies for kids that the parents either don't give a shit or they don't have the money, one or the other. I want to make sure that kids have food.
Yeah.
Like, I helped, I donated like proceeds for a year of album sales. Unfortunately, I'm not John Mayer, so it wasn't that much money. But it this organization where they fill up backpacks of food for the kids to take home for the weekend. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
There's another thing where you can call the school, and if there's any outstanding lunch debts, you can pay them off.
I love that.
There's a lot of things that we can do. And Melissa and I do quite a bit, actually. And but it's never enough. I think the more you do, the better. But I don't want to see people on the street freezing and give a jacket away or buy them jackets or sleeping bags or whatever. And we make way too much money in this country to have people dealing with that kind of shit.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay. So I wrap up every podcast with the same question.
All right.
Which is, if you could do one thing every day forever, what would it be?
It's just going to sound cheesy, but I really mean it because it's funny. Cause before I left, my wife said, I said, well, I got to go now. And she kind of gave me the pout. And I love being loved by someone like that, you know? And I think if I could spend every day with my wife just sitting on the couch and just having a conversation or just like ragging on whatever we're watching on television, I think that's what I would do every day. I put her, she's a priority over anything that I do in my life.
Hmm.
And I don't know why. I just, she's the best.
She's your happy place.
She is my happy place. I never get so frustrated where I'm like, I got to leave. I enjoy it. And then music would be a close second.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. I mean, those are two things that you've already have a lot of.
Yeah. So yeah, totally.
You're doing it.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, this was a good talk.
Yeah.
Went to some
very deep, very
intense places.
And all over the place.
I don't know how we got there, but I'm looking forward to like listening back and kind of like mapping out like, wow, how did we get that far into religion and everything? But yeah, I'm glad we went there.
Yeah, it was a great conversation. I love the house too.
Thanks, man. Thanks for coming over.
Thanks for having me.